Mark Zuckerberg says he's putting privacy first. In a major shift Wednesday, Zuckerberg shared his plans for Facebook. In a detailed blog post titled, quote, "A privacy-focused vision for social networking," he wrote, "I believe the future of communication will increasingly shift to private, encrypted services where people can be confident what they say to each other stays secure and their messages and content won't stick around forever."
Only 10 of the 12 Federal Reserve districts reported that their economy is growing, and then the pace was just slight to moderate. Two districts, Philadelphia and St. Louis, said economic activity was flat, and half of districts said the government shutdown slowed down growth. Overall, the Fed said consumer spending was mixed, with bad weather and the higher cost of credit weighing on retail and on auto sales.
Forbes has proclaimed Kylie Jenner the world's youngest billionaire. The magazine says her cosmetics company is worth $900 million, but puts the 21-year-old's overall wealth at around $1 billion. It earns her a spot on Forbes' 2019 ranking of the richest people in the world, released Tuesday. She sits at the end of a list led by Amazon's Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's March the 7th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for tuning in today for another edition of The Opening Bell. And we've got another business day getting underway here. The intel from the markets momentarily, and some business headlines today on the program. It is Thought Leader Thursday, and Brett McKittrick will be here from Associated Benefits, senior HR consultant there. We've talked a lot recently about how our bank accounts and credit reports can be hacked. But do you ever think about your 401k being hackable? We're going to talk to Brett about that today and maybe have some ideas on how to better secure our 401ks. A little bit later in the program, this, of course, is Women's History Month, and United Airlines is giving women artists a chance to paint on a 757 airplane their work, to showcase their work. And we will talk to United Systems chief pilot coming up at about 5:40 this morning about that contest and also Women's History Month. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening losses a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow futures are down 76 points now. That's almost a third of a percent. S&P futures are down about a quarter of a percent. Same story over at the NASDAQ this morning. And in Europe, markets are all in the red. In London, Germany, and France, in Germany down by about a half a percent, in London by a half a percent, and in France by a half a percent. In Asia, the Nikkei is going to finish the day down 140 points, nearly half a percent, almost three quarters of a percent now, really. The Hang Seng off nearly 258 points, down more than three quarters of a percent. And oil in the United States is at 56.68, which is up 46 cents, and that's almost three quarters of a percent as well. Before we begin with Thought Leader Thursday, some headlines you heard in the opening montage, the Beige Book from the Federal Reserve yesterday, a couple of other notes, important notes from that. The Fed says that wages continue to increase for both low and high-skilled positions across the U.S. A majority of the Fed districts are reporting moderately higher wages, but the Fed says that middle-wage jobs are not enjoying the same level of wage gains. The Fed also says the job market remains tight, notable worker shortages for positions relating to specifically information technology, manufacturing, trucking, restaurants, and construction. Finally, employers, the Fed says, are trying to be creative in attracting workers beyond pay, with about half of the districts reporting non-wage forms of employee compensation, including bonuses, relocation assistance, vacation time, and flexible work arrangements. Some notes from the Beige Book yesterday. Sears is being sued after coming out of bankruptcy not just a month ago. Stanley Black & Decker is taking the retailer before a federal court over the iconic Craftsman's brand of tool. A longtime staple of Sears, Stanley bought the Craftsman brand for nearly $1 billion back in March of 2017. The deal allowed for Sears to still sell a limited number of Craftsman-branded products. Sears is out with what it's calling the Craftsman Ultimate Collection, with the tagline, "The real home of the broadest assortment of Craftsman." Stanley is arguing that they didn't pay all of that money so that Cirrus could claim that Stanley's Craftsman's tools seem somehow illegitimate. Let's begin this morning front and center with the 401k security. We've talked a lot about how our bank accounts and email accounts and credit reports all can be hacked. Now there's some warning about the vulnerability of 401k accounts. Let's bring in Brett McKittrick this morning. Brett is the SVP and senior HR consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, part of Associated Bank, and he's our thought leader this morning. Brett, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
You have scared me today, and I guess we're going to scare everybody now about, not necessarily scare them, but no one thinks that their 401k plan might be hackable, and it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so instead of scaring people, let's say we're trying to raise awareness.
Sure.
Right? And so, you know, we know from a legal or regulatory standpoint, our personal or protected health information is protected under HIPAA privacy and security laws. We know, say, that financial institutions that hold our bank accounts are subject to many privacy and security laws. Well, the problem here is with a 401k plan, you have so many different players. You have an employer plan sponsor. You have participants like employees and beneficiaries, former employees. Then you have a number of different service providers, the people that help that plan sponsor run that 401k plan, investment advisors, third-party administrators, et cetera. And no one single regulatory body controls what each of those sort of players in the 401k field need to do to keep personally identifiable information or plan data safe.
And I'm going to go through this sort of methodically because you've touched on a couple things there.
Sure.
We assume that from the employer standpoint, the concern is somebody in the HR department or even somebody at a computer somewhere in the building is going to open up the door for the information on the 401k to be put out. Is that a fair way to say that?
Yeah, that's one potential risk. You're exactly right. One of the problems here is, you know, think of it. Let's compare it to protected health information under HIPAA. Well, here in America, we don't own our own medical records, right? They're owned by a medical provider or an insurance company or an insurance plan. Well, it's relatively easy to safeguard that when you have such big bodies controlling that information or data. In the case of a 401k plan data, so, you know, think of a person's name, address, social security number, account information, login username and passwords. Mm-hmm. All of these things might be that protected or personally identifiable data. And you're right. An HR person could have a piece of that, mixed with a service provider like a third-party administrator having a piece of that, mixed with you yourself, me, as a plan participant having a piece of that. And when all those pieces are put together, now you have something that could be exploited, stolen, and used against you.
And, you know, the question comes to mind, who's responsible for that? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, I guess, and there have to be some sort of investigation, if it's even possible, to find out where the breakdown occurred.
That's exactly right. And it could occur on a number of different fronts. And that's one of the main reasons that makes this problem so complex and multi-layered.
Is there some sort of, I guess the better question is, what's being done in HR departments now to fight this and prevent some of these things from happening?
Sure. And so I'll take this in a couple different areas.
Okay.
One, I'll maybe end with talking about from a government or regulatory perspective. But first, what plan sponsors do now is, or what we would advise a plan sponsor to do, is think of it maybe as a three-way partnership of security between the employer, the participants, and again, that service provider, those, you know, investment advisors, TPAs, helping that 401k plan sponsor. But it really begins with the plan sponsor. And so what they can do is, for instance, educate and make aware their participants of maybe some common hacking schemes, like phishing, for instance, or password attacks. And what they can do is maybe highly suggest more complex passwords or require them. Two-step authentication. So, you know, you log in, but then you get a text on your phone saying, you know, write this number into your login mm-hmm. information. Things like that, just to help the participants become more aware of potential pitfalls out there. What they can also do on the service provider side is really hold these service providers accountable. Many third-party administrators and plan administrators offer something like a cybersecurity comfort letter, or there's something that they can do contractually to ensure that whoever that plan sponsor is working with is providing the safeguards necessary for that plan data and personal information.
And, you know, the service provider here is a pretty important one because I won't use any names of companies, but the company I'm thinking of, when I make a change, they send me an email and say a change has been made.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have to speak with a human being, so they have some sort of record of me physically or, you know, one-on-one communication. Those are kind of good security tools as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, the more things like that are in place, and it's a tough balance because, you know, a plan sponsor or a service provider doesn't want to make it so unbelievably challenging and go through 38 steps to make any kind of change. People naturally won't even mess with their 401k as a result, but they have to find that balance to doing some of the, putting in some of the safeguards that you're suggesting, to make sure that, hey, Steve, you are the person that is directing this change. And it's not some outside party.
You know, I think the worst case scenario is somebody gets into a 401k and takes money or does something to damage your retirement account. What happens in that scenario? Let's say I'm not at fault and somebody hacks in. Is there any insurance? Is there any recoup of what has happened?
Yeah, great question. So a couple of things. First of all, on that service provider level, a plan sponsor, before they engage with a, you know, anyone helping them about their 401k, they should ask that service provider, hey, what do you have in place from a recovery standpoint or from an insurance standpoint to make this person whole should something go wrong or should there be a cyber breach? Now, in addition to that, we highly recommend that that plan sponsor employer have their own cybersecurity insurance.
Mm.
That maybe if they're acting as a fiduciary on the plan, and many plan sponsors are sort of being charged under ERISA, the body of law that governs 401k plans from a participant rights standpoint, as a fiduciary, they are required to safeguard all plan data, or excuse me, all plan assets of which plan data is part of. So we recommend that maybe you look into fiduciary liability insurance. So again, if something goes wrong, that individual, that HR director, that CEO, the board of a company, whoever the fiduciaries are for that plan, are personally protected as well.
It sounds like we have some homework to do. From a consumer standpoint, an employee's standpoint, how do we check whether or not our employer has some of these things in place?
Yeah, first thing to do is just ask. You know, so a couple of ways. Some employers are more involved in their own 401k plan than others. Some farm out everything to a third party. And so in that regard, maybe the participant would have that natural relationship with that service provider, mm-hmm. and that participant certainly would be able to ask them directly if information is not already given to them. Otherwise, just go up the chain in your own company. Ask the HR individual, ask the finance individual, someone that's probably has their hands in the 401k plan.
Luckily, we haven't heard of many, if any, of these hackings of 401k. I know, but in prepping for today's interview, you said it's not a matter of if, but when, which is sort of frightening.
It really is. Yeah. And the government's taking note of this. Again, because of the multifaceted, all the players involved in this, it's very hard to have one law that says, hey, we're covering everything. You must do it this way. But in February, a couple of Congress people wrote a letter to the Government Accountability Office, and they basically said, where are we at in this stuff? And many questions that they asked the Government Accountability Office is, what current regulations are in place to safeguard people's money in situations like this and their personal data?
And so what would be some of the solutions there? Are we talking about regulations that have been proposed yet?
This is the government, right?
Right.
So slow as molasses, but we're heading in that direction. And by the way, just because regulation might be on the horizon or the government puts out a law saying companies or plan service providers have to do it this way, that doesn't mean everything will be great and easy and clean. However, it does raise awareness, number one, and it does put some onus on very specific individuals to make them react or act in a way to help safeguard everyone's money.
Does this threat perhaps cause employers to think twice about managing any of this at all in-house?
Yeah, in a lot of ways it should. You know, here I am talking about be careful of who you work with, but doing it yourself in-house, it's just like having a health plan. If you have a self-funded health plan, there's no way on earth you should handle all the claims in-house, right? And so you have a third-party administrator, you have people helping you with that similarly here.
You know, we've heard in cases where people have their identity stolen, that sometimes it takes forever to fix this and make it right. I'm guessing that's what we want to avoid if somebody gets into our 401k. Make it as easy as possible for us to fix it if something happens.
Yeah, I think that's part of that as well. And I guess time will tell. See what happens there.
Yeah. So marching orders today as we end this interview, if from an employer standpoint and from an employee standpoint, what should be the first marching orders?
I'll say from an employee standpoint first.
Okay.
Number one, know who you're dealing with. If you have questions about security, ask, as we said, your service provider or your employer, and pay attention to notifications. You know, as you mentioned, you know, you'll receive a notification saying a change has been made. Actually go in and open that up and see what that really means.
Mm-hmm.
From an employer perspective, I just say know who you're dealing with, who you're working with. Challenge your service providers to say, hey, where are you at in this space? And then also talk to your liability or insurance consultants or brokers that you deal with to talk about cybersecurity liability policies as well as fiduciary liability policies.
And then back to the employee part of this too, if you haven't gone in and set up those notifications,
mm-hmm.
two-factor, also the notifications that there's been a change, do that immediately.
Absolutely.
Brett, it's good chatting with you. How can people have this conversation one-on-one if they want with you?
Sure. My email address is brett.mckittrick, my full name, at associatedbrc.com.
Good information. We'll see you again next time.
Thanks, Steve.
It is Brett McKittrick, the Senior Vice President and Senior HR Consultant at Associated Benefits and Risk Consulting, which is part of Associated Bank. Our Thought Leader Conversation, we do them every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. You can find more at WGNRadio.com and also over at AssociatedBank.com/thoughtleadership. You can meet our thought leaders there and hear more conversations and follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. It is Women's History Month, and our hometown airline, United Airlines, is giving women, the artists, a larger-than-life canvas. An actual aircraft, a Boeing 757, joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this and the role of women in aircraft in the airlines, especially at United, is Beeb O'Neill, United System Chief Pilot. Beeb, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
First, let's tell people what you do at United. The System Chief Pilot does what at United?
Oh, well, we have about 12,600 pilots, so the System Chief Pilot oversees all of those folks.
So you're in charge of the whole kit and caboodle, aren't you?
Well, we have several different operating divisions, but as far as the pilots day to day, yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah. So let's talk about this the Women's History Month event and the contest. It is a contest. Where did the idea come from, and why give this giant aircraft as a canvas?
Well, you know, March being Women's History Month, United wanted to open the aperture a little bit and give an opportunity to use an airplane, and or two airplanes, actually, as a canvas to celebrate some of our women artists.
Especially some of the women artists who don't get a lot of publicity for whatever reason. Give us a sense of how much publicity they're going to get when this aircraft takes off.
Well, there'll be one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, and we have such a large presence, as you know. Not only in Chicago, but across the West Coast, San Fran, Los Angeles, Newark, Dallas. So a lot of presence. So it will be going transcon. It will service a lot of passengers, and they'll get to be able to celebrate these women's success.
Yeah, I saw a statistic that the average 757, what flies about 1.5 million miles a year, makes about 476 cross-country trips. So that's a lot of publicity. That's a lot of people seeing that canvas.
Yeah, it sure is, and it's a great way to not only let the employees, the pilots, flight attendants, all the work groups, as well as everybody walking through the terminals, to really be able to expose some of these women's artwork to so many people.
I believe people who want to submit and get into this contest have until March 24th to do that. Is that correct?
That is correct, right.
Beeb, let's talk about United Airlines, because you have some bragging rights at United about the number of women pilots who are in the air at United. Here's your chance to brag for United a little bit this morning. Talk about it, if you will.
You bet. So of all the airlines, United leads the league in the numbers of women pilots on property, and we're getting more each and every week. So it's a pretty proud number. We're no longer a novelty, and there's women all over the pilot ranks, all over work groups and flight instruction and evaluators and flight management and myself. So there's really, we're just an everyday workaday group of women that are really making it better for the folks behind us.
Has it been, I'm guessing it's not been an easy fought path to that point. Talk a little bit about the history of getting to this point.
Well, I have several folks to thank for that, as we all do, several mentors and several women ahead of us. And, you know, women have been in the airline ranks since the 70s, and each and every year has seen numbers grow. You know, you just have to get in your environment and just execute, do a good job, and be prepared. And sorry about that. And you know, just do your job as best you can. And there's the gender issue just evaporates.
Yeah, and talk to us a little bit about the culture at United. Is there something different at the United in the culture that's helping the women pilots there flourish?
Well, I think there's a culture for everyone, actually. We have a great diversity and inclusion culture here, and we are just doing great things. And women are everywhere, and there's no need to make any fanfare over it. They're just getting out there, doing their job, and executing very well, and just very well respected and regarded across the industry.
If you had to give our listeners a little bit of a history lesson here, female pilots, women pilots, who are some of the people that you've looked up to in your career? Who are some of the women pilots who we hold up in history?
Oh, gosh. You know, Emily Warner is a true pioneer in the civilian ranks. I have to shout out to Rosemary Narner from the military ranks. You know, Amelia Earhart, of course. And there's several more, and each and every one of us have our own, in particular, mentors and pioneers that we look up to. But those three, I think, are recognized across the industry, from those of us who have been in the industry for several decades to even some new entrants, that those three are probably premier.
Yeah. There's also an organization that United works with called Women in Aviation. Talk to us a little bit about that partnership.
Oh, Women in Aviation is a great platform for exposing women to all different aspects of the aviation industry, whether it's pilot, dispatch, flight attendant, all of the different work groups. And they have been around for a long time, and they are active in recruiting and education and scholarships. And we partner with them, and we'll enjoy a wonderful conference here next week in Long Beach. And they have sprung into girls in aviation all across the country, all across the world, actually. Even Europe and Asia have enjoyed some of the Girls in Aviation celebration to really get into the younger ranks to spark an interest in the aviation industry. So we look forward to a continued long partnership with Women in Aviation.
How important is that networking and especially mentorship for the younger generation coming up?
Oh, it's critical. It's probably like any industry. It really is gives you a leg up when you can get someone who's established in the industry to kind of share with you the pitfalls, the successes, the path to get to where you want to be in as quickly as you can. So we look forward to visiting with all kinds of folks. There'll be all different backgrounds, demographics, age and experience levels, and we'll just be able to mentor these folks along to get them where they eventually want to be.
Beeb, I'm curious, what is your favorite aircraft to fly, and what do you do for fun as a pilot in your off time? Do you do a lot of flying on your own in your private time as well?
You know, I don't. My favorite airplane has probably been the 747. It flies like a dream. It reads your mind, and it lands like a dream. We're sorry to see it go. But that has been my favorite to date. I currently fly the Airbus, which flies domestic, and it's the workhorse of the industry, so I thoroughly enjoy that. On my time off, I'd like to play some tennis, I like to travel, and I like to read.
Yeah, they said I had actually a good opportunity to fly a United 747 before they were put away, I guess. I have to agree with you on that. So what does the future hold for women in the airlines, not only as pilots, but elsewhere moving forward?
Well, frontier is endless. You know, we have astronauts and flight surgeons and all kinds of frontiers. These borders are breaking down, and they're no longer gender specific. So all these, you know, even military opportunities for women have been opened up to include combat and all of those other historically gender specific. So it's an exciting time to be a woman in the aviation industry.
Well, we appreciate you being with us this morning, and we're going to get the word out about this contest, and hopefully we'll all be able to see some of the artwork on the 757s as they get selected a little bit later on this month. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, and thank you so much for letting me join you this morning.
Beebe O'Neill is a United System Chief Pilot at United Airlines. Again, this is a chance for women artists to put their artwork up on a 757. You can enter at united.com. Her Art Here is the website. And again, you have until the March 24th to submit examples of work, a portfolio, also a short video. The website again is united.com/ Her Art Here.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures off anywhere from 0.25% to 1/3 this morning, heading to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Now let's get an update on agriculture and commodity news. Here is Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It was a tough day in the grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn and soybeans down 1%, wheat nearly 3% lower. Sluggish export demand for U.S. grains and a lack of news on the U.S.-Chinese trade negotiations. But at the end of the day, it was a red screen in the grain market, with the March wheat contract down 9.25 cents a bushel, March corn down 4 cents a bushel, and March soybeans down 11.75 cents a bushel. However, we did get some news on the Chinese trade talks yesterday. Trade negotiators between the United States and China are progressing well via video conference. That according to Ted McKinney, who is Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Services at USDA. He said, the talks are going well. Presently, there's a lot of discussions going on by digital video conference. Also a very good and productive thing. And right now, Mr. McKinney said, I think there's just a lot of work in getting words down, a contract or agreement, and that's the current status of the talks. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, March the 7th. The weekly look at first-time unemployment claims leads off today's economic reports. Analysts forecast 220,000 Americans filing initial claims last week. That'll be down from about 225,000 the week before. The weekly jobless report due out mid-morning. The second estimate of fourth quarter productivity and cost is out today. Experts see a 1.6% increase in productivity, a 1.8% gain in labor cost. Consumer credit for January out today. The forecast growth of $17 billion in consumer credit. Some other things on the calendar, the Challenger job cut report, the EIA natural gas report, a couple of Fed speakers, including Lil Brainard, and also on the earnings calendar today, Kroger, H&R Block, and Costco reporting quarterly earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday. It's March the 7th.